Okay, why don't we shoot?
I think he's offset. I've got the slate.
Mike's on your fucking funnel.
From the twisted mind of Mike Lead.
Mate, listen, there's nothing wrong with my...
Time has started.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with my mic. You're the one who's forgotten to put your mic on and you've been looking at the levels going, yeah, that looks good, and then not realise that there's no sound coming in on your fucking dumb shit.
You know what's hilarious is that we were having such a nice...
Did you press record without your mic on?
We were actually having such a nice conversation, and the minute I press record...
A shit on you?
You turned into this...
A shit on you!
Horrible...
Oh, shut up.
Awful...
Shut up, you face dickhead.
Atrocious...
I'm not atrocious, you are.
Selfish.
You're selfish because you don't check the fucking...
Some people are saying... The Kelly's selfish.
I don't know. Some people are saying that.
Some people are saying that Kelly's selfish.
But I'm not saying that at all.
I'm not saying that. I do agree with it.
Although I do agree that. I do agree that it's like dragons. And some people say that she's dragon. I don't think so. I think that she's a cunt. But some people say that they're dragon.
Your Trump's coming along.
My Trump's coming
it's
along.
It's okay.
Oh, man, I feel a little tired.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why do you feel so tired for?
I don't know. I had a bad sleep. Had crazy dreams.
You had a bad sleep.
I've had crazy bad dreams. I had bad dreams. I had crazy dreams last night. Crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
Something.
Kelly has, every morning for us, starts with Kelly going, baby, I had some crazy dreams last night.
Baby, I had a dream that all of the people I love died.
Yeah, basically.
This is how I was stuck in an airport and I couldn't get away.
Every morning starts. Yeah, it's just crazy.
People dying and anxieties, being stuck. I'm in America and I can't get home. I've got no passport. I'm stuck in an airport. It's all heavy, heavy anxiety dreams.
Stuck in an airport in America. Can't get out of America. This is Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh, God. Oh, Robin, why do you have to mention Robin Williams?
Remember that movie?
Why do you have to remember
The only podcast that mentions Robin Williams in the first 5 minutes of the podcast. I am Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 112 years of Goodwill Hunting School to be called Mr. Thank you very much. It's not your fault. And in the blue corner is the Italian Gelden. She is Kelly Big Whoop. Wanna fight about a fistuka? Here she is.
You know, every day I get to your door and I think maybe today he won't be there. Maybe he's just gone. No goodbye, nothing. Every day. I may not be smart, but I know that.
I know Goodwill Hunting cops a lot of shit. It cops a lot, especially in the last 5 years. I loved that movie so much.
I did too.
And I still love it. I love it. With all my heart. You know why? Because it's, to me, it's sincere. Mm. Right? I know I've watched the YouTube videos, I've read the op-eds, but at the end of the day, it's a sincere film about male friendship and male emotions and how fucking atrocious we are at processing anything at all.
You're right. You're 100% right. You think I know your story because I read Oliver Twist?
Yeah. but it turns out that Robin's character is also fucking...
That's what I mean. Couldn't deal with stuff either.
Yeah. Like, it's all male characters except for Minnie Driver in this film. And no one knows how to deal with emotions at all.
And they do. And it's great.
And the win is that one of them works out one thing once. Mm. You know what I mean? They're like, Minnie Driver is probably the thing that I should take a chance on this and see what happens.
But you know the last line? Bastard stole my line?
Yeah.
It's not in the script. Robin Williams just said it.
I did know that, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I did know that. And also, unapologetically, I love Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I know they're the whitest men in the world. Like, and I know there's probably going to be story that comes out about both of them in the next 2 weeks.
No, I don't think so.
That, like,
listen,
completely
Ben Affleck
incriminates what I'm saying here.
Dude, you watch the snippets of that terrible J-Lo doco. Ben Affleck is so fucking real.
Yeah.
This guy was an alcoholic. He's still smoking. You see pictures of him where he's like, oh, God, another day alive. And he just, I relate to him so well. Mm. There was a part in that doco where she's like, I want this, I want this, I want this. And he's like, well, I think sometimes you just don't get what you want. And she's like, no, but that's what I want. That's why I'm like who I am. I'm a career woman. And they had this like one on, you know, like a to camera thing with him where he's like, you know, she's so terrified of, you know, not being perfect and terrified of people thinking that she's bad and blah, blah, blah. Like, he goes, she has so many issues of perfection that she really needs to mentally deal with because the level of perfection she seeks does not exist.
Mm.
It was so, that's his wife. And he's being so real to her, like, just little moments of her going, well, no, I want to get Derek Jeter to do this and that's it. And he's like, you need to be more realistic about your expectations. And then as soon as the P. Diddy stuff kind of dropped, fucking he filed for divorce, which is not, I don't think it like a coincidence where he's like, they're already a bit rocky. And I reckon maybe she was like, look, I found out this and, you know, I let it go because I was trying to make it as a career person. And I reckon Ben Affleck's like, that's fucked. And he like, fight, doesn't want anything to do with it.
Mm.
Do I find, I feel like the moral compass, man, this will be a funny tidbit when I'm wrong, but I feel like the moral compass of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck is correct.
Damon definitely comes across as like the all-American boy, you know, like again. Like
married a regular woman, married a regular chick. Yeah. Had four girls.
Married a non-celebrity.
Yeah.
Has waitress. Been doing... He always shows up in my feed because, you know, I'm a filthy pinko communist unionist.
Yeah, good work, but, comrade.
Thanks, comrade. But he showed... The reason why Matt Damon shows up in my feed is because he is always doing stuff on behalf of the American Teachers Union because his mum was a teacher. And you know, I know celebrities like to be involved in charities and stuff, but it's not. That's not really a charity. That's like he's actually the likelihood of more people coming along to an American Teachers Union meeting or conference or whatever because Matt Damon's there goes through the roof, right?
There's people that hate them so much because they're like, oh, they're from the rich area, Boston, blah blah. I'm like, I don't think so. I think they're from Southie and like it's a rough area. Like when you hear Joe List talk about Boston and stuff, like it's very,
you know, working class. But also, so what? Like the people can't help the circumstances that they're born into. I'll always love Ben Affleck because he came, like he appeared to me through Kevin Smith movies, and he was they were big friends for a long time. I still think I understand Chasing Amy is probably not super kosher in 2024, but you've got to understand that film came out in 1996 and it was the best that we could do at the time. We didn't know.
Same with Mallrats. Mallrats was fantastic.
Well, Mallrats is a complete fart joke movie, right?
But yeah, he farted when she was going down on him. It's the best. Yeah. And the chick with three nipples.
But Ben Affleck's really good in that in Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
You know, like that, I think that was the first time that I saw him lead a movie and I was like, oh, this is a great film.
Remember when Jason Lee wrote the grid of like the lesbian grid?
Yeah.
Where he's like, hot lesbian, she's a unicorn, she doesn't exist. I'm like, how times have changed. You know what I mean? Times have changed.
Yeah, yeah.
We have so many hot lesbians.
Man, I saw there's a documentary that's just come out made by a young gay kid. Talking about how big Chasing Amy was for him as like he saw it when he was like 10 years old or something like that. And is like, I don't know, 30 now. And makes a documentary about trying to track down the whole cast and talk to them about how big an impact the film had on them. Which I will watch because I can't quit Kevin Smith, man. No matter what. no matter how hard I try. Yeah, he went on Rogan. Well, he hasn't been back, to be fair to him. He was on there once.
I mean, he loves smoking weed and so does Rogan. They got a common interest. That's it.
Look, it gets to the point where these people, like Joe Rogan, are so... they're part of the machine, right? They're part of the publicity machine. So people like Kevin Smith who are, You know, Kevin talks on his own podcast about how his numbers are slipping because he's a very honest guy. So he'll be like, you know, I used to be the king of podcasting. I'm not anymore, you know, sort of thing. And so I think that was probably a desperate attempt at relevancy. You know what I mean? Maybe if I go on Rogan, that maybe that's where my fans are. You're like, Kevin, I hate to tell you, man, your fans are not Rogan fans.
Yeah.
It's a completely, I mean, I'm sure there's some crossover there. But yeah. It's a very good podcast.
So what did you watch?
It's a
very this
good
week?
Podcast. I've heard. this week I've been mostly watching Andor.
Boring.
It's not boring, actually.
Okay.
It's not boring, actually. Okay. The more I watch this show, the more I think this is the greatest thing that's been done in the Star Wars universe.
Huh, really?
Yeah. I think it's the best written. I think it's the best acted. It has a very socialist undertone to the whole show, which is probably why I'm so attracted to it.
Mm.
But what I really like about it is what happens underneath. So the Skywalker saga is here, and that's the story that everybody knows.
Mm.
What are the real world ramifications of the Empire, and how do actual real life everyday people deal with that? And how do rebellions begin, and how do revolutionaries start their whole thing, and how scary it is to do that? Like, they really portray how scary it is for the initial rebels to do what, to become rebels, because the Empire is so all-encompassing. And obviously, like, there's a lot of real-world references that they're using, like Nazi Germany, the CIA, the KGB.
Oh, it's got Diego Luna in it.
The cast is amazing. Skarsgård, the old
Stella.
Skarsgård.
Oh, man, Boris, isn't it?
Speaking of Goodwill Hunting.
Oh, yeah. He plays the Fields Medal.
Yeah, he's Robin. Guy. Robin's
What's
best
his
mate.
Name in it?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, God.
I need your help. What's Robin's name in that film? I can't remember anyone's name in that film.
Right, I'm on it. It's
an amazing
love him
cast. It's
so much.
Written by Tony Delroy.
Professor Gerald Lumba. That's Stella.
Right.
Tony Ron Delroy. Williams is Sean. Sean, such a fucking Boston name. Yeah. Dr. Sean Maguire. Will Hunting. Good Will Hunting. It is a absolutely lame title because it's like Will, his name is William Hunting, but it's like Goodwill. He's got Goodwill and he's hunting for it. Oh, bleh, lame.
Listen, man, that last scene where the car's driving off and Elliot Smith's playing, fucking, it gets me every time.
He ended up committing suicide.
Well, did he?
No, he didn't.
But there's a whole thing with Elliot Smith. It's like Kurt Cobain of like,
oh, shit.
Did he kill himself?
I'm on
Was
it.
He murdered?
Shit.
The likelihood is that he killed himself. But okay. You don't hear too many people stabbing themselves in the chest like 10 times.
That was wild to me.
Anyway. Poor old Elliot. Mm-hmm. He was a very troubled young man. Anyway, Andor, listen, I have so much limited spare time at the moment through work and other things that and I'm loving the podcast again, A More Civilized Age, who are doing a deep dive on Andor, which is why I'm watching it.
Mm.
If you check out that podcast and watch the show at the same time, you will have a ball. It's such a brilliant, like, it is an adult. If you love, like, The Sopranos or Breaking Bad or any of the Golden Age Mad Men, this is Star Wars offering to that. And I would put it up on the same level as any of those shows. And by episode, it's only little bits and pieces where you'll be like, oh, yeah, this is in the Star Wars universe. You know, it's not like, you know, there's no Wookiees. There's no lightsabers. There's no really? Ewoks. There's none of that at all. The closest thing you get to Star Wars is they mention Senator Palpatine, who's the Emperor, once.
Mm.
And that's it. No John Williamson score. It's actually got a very minimalistic, almost synth-wavy score. It's a bit like Blade Runner. If you, again, if you like Blade Runner, the movie, of course, what else would it be? You should check out Andor. It's the closest thing. Andor is the closest thing that Star Wars has got to Blade Runner. If you like that cyberpunk, post-apocalyptic kind of proper sci-fi, more in tone of like Star Trek than Star Wars, which is very sort of adventure movie type thing, you'll love this. I genuinely think you would love it, Bub, if you gave it a chance.
Yeah. How many grumps you give it?
5.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I love it that much. I haven't finished. I've got one more episode, which I'm kind of savoring because I don't want it to be over. There is a second season of it that drops next year, apparently. So I'm super excited for that. Super excited. But that's about it. I haven't really... We've watched a few episodes of a few things. We watched another episode of The Bear. We watched the latest episode of Only Murders in the Building.
Yes, there's one more episode of Only Murders left. And I think it was like the third episode of The Bear. Man, when I watched The Bear, it's so stressful.
It is stressful. Can I say the episode that we watched last night, which was called Doors?
Yeah.
Was it Doors?
Doors, yeah. Doors Open.
Doors Open.
Yeah, like Doors.
This was the first time since I started watching The Bear where I was like, even not all of it, but it feels like it's leaning on its own structures a little bit. A lot of that like repetition of like, I think that was what people kind of got, like what people pointed to as like, oh, this is why this show is so good.
Mm.
This was the first time last night where I was like, it felt a little, like I understand that they are making they're making editing and directorial choices through repetition. Like they're telling the story through repetition. I get that. But I also think they're repeating themselves, if that makes sense. Like I feel like there's a few episodes in this series already that are a bit of a holding pattern. You know what I mean? Like we're getting a little bit of character development.
Is it
development.
Repeating themselves or is it stylized?
No, I think it is stylized repetition. I get that. I understand that they're doing that. But I think on a more macro level of the show, there's a bit of, I don't know. Well, I just feel like I've kind of seen this episode before.
Right, okay. Okay, now that makes sense. You've kind of seen it before. They're not showing you anything new.
Not really. It's like, oh, the restaurant's struggling a bit. Okay.
I feel like the one like, before.
Yeah, I get that.
I feel like the episode before this, where they did like a 30-minute episode that was 30 minutes in time, where everyone was arguing, I actually really love that premise of it. About
I didn't hate this episode, just on to be on
no,
the record.
No, 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 but I didn't hate the other episode either. But there was too much like arguing, which I'm like, okay, great. And this one here, there was a lot of arguing. But I do really appreciate when they're in the kitchen, it's very white. And it's loud. And the minute they go through those doors, it's dim, it's quiet, it's sweet, it's nice. I feel like they've really good editing choices in this film, really good editing choices. And, yeah, I'm curious to see. I feel like I feel like Carmen's going to ruin this and I just hope he doesn't because I feel like, you know, like where there's been, you know, like Richie's coming in going, you're fucking me because, you know, like things aren't ready or like Carmen is like, if it's not perfect, it doesn't go out. And it's like, well, you need to train that chef to make sure it is perfect. That's on you, buddy.
Yeah.
Why are we in service? Why is this happening in service? Before service starts at 5:30, you know, the whole day of prep, like you get there at 12, you should be prepping that fucking chef so they know exactly. And then all of a sudden she's like really nervous and she's fucking up because of that, which I'm like, that shouldn't be happening. She should be confident.
Yeah.
You're not leading properly. And I wish they had I wish they would address that a bit. Maybe they will in the next episode. I don't know. But I think they're kind of alluding to the fact that he's probably going to have another nervous breakdown.
Because I think it's about him. I think this season is about him overcoming all the PTSD from the Joel McHale character. that was his trainer when he was a kid.
Mm.
Because he keeps having flashbacks to that, and Mikhail keeps showing up in his head and stuff. Mm. And I think what we'll start to see is that Khan
becomes him.
Becomes that guy.
Yeah.
But and, I feel or like- has to overcome the tendencies to repeat that behavior because he doesn't know that that Khan will essentially either have to learn how to become his own version, like that, but to not be his that. True self to make the restaurant succeed. Or he'll have to step away. Like, he's so fucked up that he'll have to step away and hand it over to Sydney to
run the restaurant or whatever. Because, like, every time
you're already seeing that Sydney's stepping up and doing most of it, like, is, like, filling all the gaps that Calm's leaving in the kitchen because he's not – he's so fixated on how Mikhail's character would critique his shit. Mm. You know, that's where that's coming from. Like, the – where you see him, like, very delicately placing, like you know, lavender on the, or whatever it is that he's like placing on the the meals. Just and this, like, meanwhile, like, everything around him is like crashing and burning, but he doesn't care because the only thing he gives a fuck about is that like praise from Mikhail that he never got.
I feel like just seeing the stress of that sous chef going, I thought I had, you know, and then the way that Sydney comes over, she's like, okay, put in the pasta. Now, put in the sauce, sauté. You got it? And, like, calmly gets her to where she needs to be. I hope that's a more of a plant for something in the future. I don't know. I think so. Because, but also, I feel like realistically, though, if we're talking about, because up until this point, this show is pretty realistic for me in terms of how a kitchen works.
Mm.
Realistically, though, that wouldn't be happening. She would not be. I mean, and maybe they're doing it to point out how much Calm is, like, crazy. Like, he's going, you know, like, he's just getting too overbearing now because it's like, well, obviously she's the sous chef. She's trained. She is doing it right, blah, blah, blah. And he's picking her apart just like the other chef, Joel McHale, used to pick him apart.
Hmm.
And it's history repeating. Maybe that's where we're going. But I just honestly think that
sometimes
this wouldn't be happening, though. I just don't. I feel like because Joel McHale was like an absolute cunt of perfection, this is more of a your shit at your job, chef. Like, I don't know. It's a different kind of play that's happening, which just tells me that she's a little too inexperienced for this role and that Sydney needs to spend more time with the chef to get up to where she is.
I think I
feel like it's not realistic.
I think she's having that emotional response because there is this crazed lunatic on the because before remember she plates a dish and then Calm picks it up and just throws it in the bin fucking Gordon Ramsay style and then she starts really breaking down after that, which is a normal human reaction to like oh fuck, I'm so nervous about getting this right. I can't even start. Like, I can't even pick up my utensils to do it, which is how I would react to a situation like that. I think with the Sydney stuff, sometimes in a TV show, you've got to show. Like, yes, maybe that wouldn't happen in a real kitchen, but you're trying to show that Sydney is like
the normal one.
She's the lead. She's the actual leader of the kitchen. She's the one that is keeping everything together. Yeah. Just, you know, and so you show her walk over to the Latinx. I can never remember a lady, the Latinx lady who's, anyway, she does the pasta stuff. You know, she's going to take 5 extra minutes out of being at the pass to help.
Yeah.
So we as an audience see. Because I even said when we're watching, I'm like, God, Sydney's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
This is exactly what that. Scene was designed to do.
I'm curious to just see where this goes, watch more episodes, because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what Calm's development is, because he is turning into a bit of a cunt. But also, I think you're right. I think that's maybe where they're going to go, where he's going to turn into what he hates, which I think will be really interesting.
Just the repetition thing. Like, I think since Fishers was such a, you know, the Christmas episode and the season beforehand, it was such a, like, seminal episode of television. I think a lot of the editing techniques that were used in
yeah,
that,
they're using it again.
That episode, yeah. They're leaning on it a bit because it's that like, oh, well, that's what people want and that's what we do and that's our style. And the thing that I've loved about The Bear so far, outside of like the casting, the story and all that sort of stuff, is how interesting their filmic techniques have been. Like they'll do very different stuff with the camera and in the editing suite and with sound and all that kind of stuff. So I just hope it doesn't – I hope we just don't get a cookie-cutter Bear episode every week, you know what I mean? But anyway, this show's been so great. I've got a lot of trust in them.
Man, I went back and rewatched the episode Forks. Probably one of my favorite episodes in a TV show. Like
I think you talked about this on the last
episode. If you went back and watched, like, you know, every season, every show that you love, there's like one episode that is like the episode. It's just like fucking chef's kiss. Like in Mad Men, I think it's the last episode of season 3 going to 4 where Sterling Cooper closes down and they make their own thing and it ends with them in a hotel room creating this new, you know, like I think the episode's called Have a Seat, Close the Door. Close the Door, Have a Seat. It is one of the best paced episodes where it's incredible. It's an incredible episode. I feel like Forks is that, you know, like every show has one episode that just fucking nails it.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like Breaking Bad, it might be – I feel like for me the Breaking Bad episode was when they killed the little kid on the bike. And then you just were like, oh, fuck, this is going to be bad.
To me, the pizza – throwing the pizza up on the – because that's the moment where it's sort of like the second – like – the first episode is brilliant of Breaking Bad. It's one of the best first episodes of all time. And you're kind of seeing like, oh, this is the rock bottom moment for oh, my God, I've completely blanked on everybody's fucking – not Jesse, Walter.
Walter White?
Yeah. But that episode, like, he's trying to get back in his wife's life and his son hates him. And he just has – that's the moment to me where Walter White decides, right, fuck it, enough.
Yeah. What's the point?
Enough. Now I'm going to go into full psycho mode, you know?
I actually rewatched – I think it came up on a Twitter thing. I rewatched the scene where he says, I'm the one who knocks. And it's brilliant. Just the way that you kind of the you know, the wife's like, but what about blah, blah? And don't you get it? I am the one who knocks.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, oh – it's brilliant. God,
Skylar White, besides Joffrey in Game of Thrones, I don't think I've hated a character more. Yeah. I used to have huge arguments with people at the time about Skylar because there were people who were like, well, of course she's like that. He's such an asshole.
Yeah,
like,
she's in the dark. I'm in the dark here.
I'm in the dark here.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, I've finished watching Game of Thrones finally. Yeah.
That's not it. Christmas song.
Yeah, it's Joffrey is obviously the worst.
Yeah, he's the worst.
But you never finished it, and I will categorically say
I will go back and watch the second half of the show at some point.
Yeah,
because I know I loved it. I didn't hate it, but yeah,
he's bad. Ramsay's the worst. Ramsay is the most evil, to the point where some scenes with him I had to fast forward because his torture techniques were horrific. However, what a great comeuppance.
He'd make people watch Alan's new stand-up special. You know, he would. What else would he do, bub? What were some of the other torture techniques?
Make him watch Ricky Gervais's special.
A lot of new specials of old comedians, a lot of the block. Where Jerry Seinfeld interviews about what's wrong with new comedy, that kind of thing. Like, no, I love Jerry so much. I don't want to hear this. Not Jerry.
But it's a really good, he's a horrible character and he gets a really, because I was like, surely it has to pay off some, like, he needs to suffer at some point. And it's done very well. When it comes around, I was like, that's exactly how I wanted that to go.
When it comes around.
But all spoilers, no facts.
Yeah, all spoilers, no facts.
So there's two in the last end of the second last season.
Game of Thrones, everybody.
I know, right? There's two main fights. There's a big, big battle with the White Walkers.
Yeah.
And then there's a big battle with the King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
With, I can never say her name, Cersa?
Cersa, yeah. That's right.
The Lannisters, right? Yeah. I feel like there was a big mistake here. They should have had the battle with the Lannisters first and then the battle with the White Walkers.
Right.
Because I feel like – but I understand why they did it because they had to like show, you know, the chick with the white hair, the dragon mum. Mother of dragons. They had to show her development because she starts to turn a bit bad. But there's just – the battle of the White Walkers is so brilliant. The way – like there's this one scene where it's like dark – and the witch like lights everyone's like everyone's holding a pole thing and lights fire so you can see, you know, and it's this brilliant moment because it's just like rows and rows and rows of soldiers holding and she just creates fire and you can just see people in the castle like smiling like we've got a chance here and they charge and you just see them in the dark charging and it's just like fire and then slowly in the dark. You just see him in the distance, but you don't know what's happening. You just see the sound start to go away and all the lights go out, all of them. And it's brilliant. Like, and just like the gulp from the castle where you're like, oh, they're fucked. It's so fucking good. It's great. And then the Lannister stuff, I'm like, ugh. For me, this show has always been about the White Walkers more than them. I mean, but it is a Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought it was good though. It wasn't the best show I've ever seen and I'm glad I finished it. But in terms of other TV shows like Mad Men, Sopranos, like there's other shows that I actually would rate so far above Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I get it. Too violent, too much nudity, too sexual. Could have done a lot of stuff without that bullshit. I think I'll give it 3.5 grumps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wasn't like – I was watching it because when I work, I put TV on in the background. But I wasn't like – there was a few moments like the white – what you know, the white, everything to do with the White Walkers. I was like, fuck yes, here we go.
Yeah.
But there was just other stuff where I was like the dragon stuff. Ugh. I just wasn't hanging to watch it. I wasn't – the Bear and Only Murders, I actually am excited for a new episode.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, I wasn't.
Yeah, Only Murders, probably at the point. I know there's a fifth season's been announced.
Oh, no way, is there? Yeah. No, they've got to stop it.
Yeah.
No, it's done.
It needs to. I would have stopped it after one season. I genuinely, like, as much as I've been happy that there's been more of it, I think if you did the one season left it would be one of those things where people are like, oh, this is great.
For like a Fawlty Towers show. But also, what's Martin Short's character? Poltenham. Walter? Is it Walter?
No, it's not Walter.
What they should do is give him his own show. Oliver Putnam. Oliver Putnam as like in an 8-episode, like a Curb show. Like him, like in the industry and the way that the Ron Howard stuff. I think he would be so fun. It would be really fun.
And, like, this season's actually being set up to, like, you know, spoiler alerts if you haven't watched season 4. Oliver's going to get married. You know, like...
Duck Melissa McCarthy's
funny. What's her name? It looks like I've got a job now.
My name's
She's going to start her own podcasting company. Like
Selena Gomez, this is how she acts. Oliver, we need to go over here because I don't know how to I can't open up my mouth big enough to do anything.
Yeah.
And I don't have any expression. Oliver, this is how I act.
It's the sweaters.
Yeah. This is how I act. This is to show that I am exasperated or I'm excited or I'm angry. Oliver, I just get my pitch and go, Oliver, oh no. And what's the other guy's name? What's Martin Short's name? Charles.
Anyway.
Mate, it is. Don't know what the fuck is wrong with her voice, but I think someone said to her, you act better when you have no emotion. And it's too much because she's literally mumbling.
It's too much, baby. You anyway, don't speak right.
I think we're going for a while. Should we?
We've been going for a while, but we have to talk about the Gary Coleman documentary that we randomly watched yesterday afternoon.
Quickly,
we need
to go to the toilet soon. Oh my God, Gary Coleman documentary on binge.
Quickly, quick as you can.
Quickly, it's on Netflix or binge?
I'm bouncing on my toes like Gordon Ramsay. Quickly.
Was it on Netflix?
It was on
binge.
Bonge.
Binge. The Gary Coleman, Different Strokes, Rule the World, Different Strokes, doco. Holy fuck. And it was interesting because I was at the beginning, they played the 911 call that his wife made when he kind of like fell over and hurt himself, which led to his death. And it's funny because Damien, you were like, you know, these people, like his wife will get a TV show out of this, she'll sell a story, she'll do this, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, this documentary is, I have a feeling he's painting her to look really, really bad. And you were like, no, she's going to, like, she agreed to do it, blah, blah, blah. And then as it kind of unravels, I feel like it really became evident that this documentary made her, like, and she voluntarily interviewed and, you know, everyone did, it made her look the worst person I've ever met, like Ramsay, Game of Thrones Ramsay illness.
She's
a
awful.
Fucking awful.
This
that photo, she takes a photo of him. Oh, man.
I truly gasped. I can't remember the last time I gasped watching something.
We both gasped.
Let's just give a little bit of context here. So yeah. Gary Coleman was a child star on a massive 80s sitcom called Different Strokes. If you're listening to our podcast, you probably already know all this anyway. He seemed to be a relatively nice guy. As he got older, things seemed to get weirder and weirder. Like, they go into his parents stole a whole bunch of money off him, his manager, his accountant. Essentially, he earned close to like $20 million from Different Strokes in the 80s, which would be like fucking $60 million now.
There's like no money left.
And he basically had no money left over. He was typecast, so he couldn't really get other work. He didn't want to lean into his catchphrase or anything to earn money. And so as you start to go along his life, he starts to attract this sort of like rogues gallery of strange people, which culminates with him getting married to this absolute psycho weirdo.
She's like
woman.
19 and she was trying to be an extra.
He was doing this terrible film in Utah called Church Ball, which was a film about,
I guess, playing basketball in the
playing
church.
Playing basketball in a church or something. Anyway, you met her there. And then that's when everything starts to sort of spiral out of control. That like she's forcing him to do work he doesn't want to earn money, and
like she's not working at all.
She doesn't work at all.
Yeah,
she like
looks like the biggest drug addict. It's awful. All these people taking advantage of him, and he knows it, and he's trying to break away. And he tried to get divorced from her. People trying to. And she's just this fucking piece of shit. He's a virgin still. He has no sexual drive. So
yeah,
I don't
so
know
she's
what's
essentially
going on there.
So they did divorce, but they were still living together.
She was still taking advantage of him, and you know, eating his food, and he's paying for all her bills.
So
and
the documentary is a very slow burn because it's kind of like you're watching it, and it keeps you interested enough to be like, oh, okay, this is kind of a sad story about what happened to Gary Coleman, and then it culminates with essentially the wife saying that she was upstairs, heard a loud bang, came downstairs, and Gary was in a pool of his own blood.
He'd fallen over. Like
that he'd fallen over. And then the last 15, 20 minutes of the documentary is essentially what happened from that moment until she turned off his life support.
Oh, my God. This is so fucked.
It's really dark and dire, but also in a way where you're like, oh, my God.
We both gasped at a moment where she took a selfie with him while he's in
and
a coma.
And then sold it to the News of the World.
Yeah.
And it was put on the front
page. Horrible. And she's like, have you seen that photo? And she's like interviewing going,
yeah, she's in the documentary. Yeah. Like, and like,
she's like, if you look at that photo, I have a tear in my eye.
But she's just completely on another. I mean, she's genuinely lost. Like, she's a genuinely lost soul. Like, she is trying to do her best to, like,
I don't know if it's alcohol fetal syndrome that she's got. There's something really mentally wrong with her. But there was the moment.
She's mentally irregular.
Yeah. The moment where he fell was because he had dialysis that day. And she said, I was feeling really sick and so he made me dinner. And then people were like, why the hell was he making her dinner? He just had dialysis. When he finishes dialysis, he's like, he can't, it's like he can't move. He needs a day.
Yeah, of course. But she was sick
and she made him cook dinner. So while he was cooking dinner, he fell over.
She wanted him to make her some pizza pockets or something.
Yeah. And so he's collapsed while making dinner, so they say. Because then the thing is that he was in a pool of his own blood.
When she calls 911, the 911 operator is like, can you support his head? Can you make sure he's not choking on his tongue? She's like, I don't want to touch him. There's blood everywhere. She it's goes, making me feel icky.
Yeah, she goes, I am too traumatized. I don't want, no, she goes, I don't want
to be traumatized by
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I don't want to be traumatized by this.
I don't
want to
be
this.
Traumatized by this.
It's just too much blood for me to handle. And they're like, well, could you put pressure on where he's bleeding? And they're like, oh, I got some of his blood on me. And it's just, and also because some of the friends, I mean, who knows, were like, the level of
basically everybody else, you get sort of introduced to his other friends.
Yeah.
And all of them by the end of the documentary are essentially, and this is them saying it, not us, that she killed him.
Because the way that he, because when you, if you fall over and if you collapse and you hit your head, you know, you can split your head open. But they were saying, because he's only 5 foot, the way that he fell and hit his head open, he should have fallen from a much higher height.
Because he had an internal hemorrhage in his brain, essentially.
It which just, that fall.
It would need to be a pretty significant impact for that to happen.
And because he's so small, he didn't have much far to
fall. Yeah, he was like 4 foot 11. So
he shouldn't have. So they were like, it was a thing where. And then when the ambulance did come, they were going to the hospital. She was like, okay, and closed the door and went back to bed.
Yeah, the ambulance come pick him up and she just went back into the house.
He's in a coma.
Didn't go to the hospital with him or anything.
And then when she did go to the hospital, they said that, you know, looks like brain activities, you know, low. You know, you want to think about turning off the life support. And she was like, you know, so it was a hard decision. So turned off life support.
I said my goodbyes and turned off.
But like didn't.
But didn't tell anybody else.
Did not tell anyone else.
Didn't tell any of his good friends. Didn't tell his parents. I mean, his parents are awful as well. But like you would still.
No one got a chance to say goodbye. And then they found out that in his will he had all these medical requests.
Yeah, and he because he had had ongoing.
Yeah,
I mean, if you don't know
he
the story,
he had no kidneys for.
Yeah,
20
years. He had ongoing
dialysis
illnesses basically his whole life. So
he had dialysis for 25 years.
Yeah, so
that
he,
is fucked.
Yeah, so he basically, you know, had very specific instructions about what should happen if he was to go to hospital, like if he was to be in this exact situation, and she like, didn't. She didn't adhere to any of his requests.
I don't, but nor did the hospital. So I don't know.
But the hospital wouldn't have known.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. Well, wouldn't they like, especially when, like when you talk about like.
But she's also not his wife at that point because they had divorced. So why is the?
I think on paper they were still married, because they had divorced. Like she goes, oh yeah, I was still living there. We were separated, but that was the thing because to everyone else they were still married. But in the house, they were living in separate bedrooms and weren't a couple. So she was still living there.
But don't the hospital need to see some kind of...
Yeah, but they were still married on paper. They hadn't divorced yet.
Like, if you're in a coma and I'm there, I could be fucking anybody. Like, just because I'm wearing a wedding ring and saying that I'm your husband, that doesn't... Yeah, they're going to need to...
They can go to births, deaths and marriages and say that we're married.
Yeah, but wouldn't you, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they be doing that first before they're turning off life support machines for people?
But they probably did, and she was still married to him.
How would she have gotten that information so quickly?
What information?
That they were married. Some sort of proof that they were married.
The hospital?
No. What? He's on life support.
Yeah.
Right? The hospital, like, supposedly in her story, say he's no good.
Dying.
We need to,
his wife.
We need to turn off his life support machine.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is the hospital should be checking that she is his wife.
Well, they probably did. She probably showed them the medical, the marriage certificate.
Mm. Yeah. Well, all I'm saying is she got that very quickly.
Well, this is
because it was less than 2 days before she turned off the.
Well, this is the. I mean. She probably did. I mean, when it,
I think there's some negligence there for on the hospital's part is what I'm
saying. Damien, 100%. He had, like, people when they die, like, one of the, like, hospitals, I've watched enough Law and Order to know about, like, you know, an ER, you know, do not resuscitate. You know? Yeah. Like, people have...
No, you're right. It's just a funny way.
I know, right? But people
Your
have...
Your Honour, I've watched a lot of Law and Order.
Yeah, a lot of... But ER, right? When someone's dying in ER, they go to next of kin and they say... When I watch they go to next of kin and they go, do you know what the wishes are of this person?
Right.
And they ask... So they ask the wife and, you know, she probably said, oh, he doesn't want to be locked up on machines. And they go, okay. But it was negligence of them to not follow through, like... somehow to get to his lawyers or something to find out what his medical requests were, because his medical requests were not carried out. He said, I do not want to be turned off on life support for at least 14 days. Mm-hmm. After 14 days, you can turn off. She turned him off after 2 days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the hospital fucked up. She's a fucking awful human. She's awful. She's garbage. You're garbage. So, yeah, just everyone just fucked up.
But, like,
everybody.
By the end of the documentary, you very much get the vibe. And you guys should watch this documentary because it's...
You should watch it. It's really interesting.
I mean, we've spoiled it for you a little bit. But,
fuck.
I mean...
Fuck.
Not really, because it's still worth watching because you'll be just blown away by the callousness of this woman.
Oh,
but fuck. Essentially, walked away from the documentary thinking... Something dodgy is going on here. You know what I mean?
Well, this is the thing, because I was like, oh, obviously she's like a callous person. She's awful, blah, blah, blah. But then when the friends were like, how do you get a massive head injury, hematoma, when you collapse from like 4 foot?
Yeah.
Like he is short.
And the body, like when you collapse, body sort of...
Yeah.
Like...
It was never investigated.
It's always like, blah.
Like the amount of blood that was gushing out of him was like... Yeah, I don't know.
The first thing that came into my head is ex-Victorian South Australian cricketer David Hooks, who got punched in a fist fight, and then the force of the punch made him hit his head on a gutter, and he died of the same thing, of an internal hemorrhage of the brain. That was the first thing that came into my head of like, that guy hit his head with that kind of impact for the exact same thing to happen.
You got two impacts. You got the punch and the hit.
Well,
to the
yeah, but it was more about the fact that the back of his head hit with that much force for that internal hemorrhage to happen, right?
Mm.
And that was the first thing that came into my head when this story, like, it's if I'm a police officer in Utah or a detective in Utah and I see this documentary, I'm reopening this. Like, I'm looking into this with a little bit more.
Mm.
Forensic lens than just like, because everything seems kosher here.
Because I think also as well, a lot of the friends were like, as far as they knew, they had separated and weren't together anymore. And then when they find out...
Well, his lawyer said flat out, like, who was also a mate of his, his lawyer in Utah, was like, he'd called me on 3 or 4 separate occasions saying, like, get the divorce papers together.
Yeah.
Or no, restraining order. He was going to put a restraining order on this woman. And then he had a voicemail from Gary Coleman saying, rescind the restraining order. We're all good. We're all back together. They had both, for the record, they had both had the cops called on them for domestic stuff. But, you know, I don't want to come across as, you know, saying that any kind of domestic abuse is fine. It's not. But this woman is also literally 3 times the size of Gary Coleman.
Mm.
Like, she's about, like, he'd be a 4'11". She looks like she's, like, 5'10 or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's so much taller and bigger than him.
Just that, seems like they were.
It would be like getting domestically abused by, like, a 12-year-old.
Yeah,
like,
it would be hard for him to be doing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad and it's gross and it's awful.
Yeah, but
and
she's like, definitely got the upper hand because she's bigger and stronger. It was more just the fact that they, you know, the friends were so shocked that they were still together and that she had the power to turn off his machine.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if she did.
But that's everyone.
But they said in the documentary that they did get divorced.
But they got back together. That's the second wedding you saw, where he was like, "I promise, and I will not cheat on you."
No, I think that was their first wedding. I don't think they got remarried, bub. Anyway. I'm not really into the kind of true crime.
I was surprised you sat and watched it.
I watched the whole thing. I was fascinated. I was on the edge of my seat. And when the worst thing, and like there are a couple of friends who genuinely seem to really care about Gary, and they were talking about the news of the world, like the selfie that she took with him literally on a life support machine and then sold, is just so awful. It's so awful. And like the documentary do blur out Gary's face in the photo and stuff, which is
so saying that he may have actually fallen downstairs. In Wikipedia, he was admitted to Utah, blah, 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 in a critical condition after falling downstairs and hitting his head, possibly after another seizure, because he'd been having seizures and experienced an epidural hematoma. So this doco said that he was in the kitchen making her dinner.
And that's what she said.
And she heard a loud bang. She said that. Yeah.
But now there's another story about him falling downstairs now.
But then, according to hospital spokesman, Coleman was conscious and lucid that morning, but his condition subsequently worsened. Like maybe he fell downstairs and then went to make her something and then collapsed.
How would the hospital know what he was like that morning? After his dialysis, they mean.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of holes here. I got a lot of holes. And as per usual, Coleman's former manager, Dion, who was in the doco, was initially involved but withdrew after Coleman's 99 will, which named him as an executor. Yeah. Was found has been executor. So everything was left to Dion.
Right.
But then a 2005 will superseded it and replaced Dion with Gray. Former business associates Anna Gray and Price. And Anna Gray, which one's Anna Gray? Was Anna the wife or was that the chick with the undercut? I mean, if it was Anna, if it's the chick with the undercut, she seems to be the only person that gave a fuck about him, you know?
Yeah, that's undercut.
Yeah. But... with Gray, the earlier had stipulated that Coleman's wake be conducted by those with no financial ties. Yep, but the later venue directed no funeral at all. Man, no funeral at all. This guy was miserable. And then, so people came out and said it was murder. While Coleman's final will named Gray as executor and awarded his entire estate to her, Coleman and Price married in seven. So Price is the wife. Although she had divorced Coleman in 08, Price claimed in a court petition that she had remarried his common law wife. Okay. And they were sharing bank accounts. So they divorce and then she's claiming they got back together. And that's where it seems that she's had all this power in the hospital. But it also sounds like the hospital didn't fucking check anything. Their relationship at the time of his death failed to meet Utah's standard for common law marriage. Hospital later issued a statement confirming that Coleman had completed an advanced healthcare directive granting Price permission to make medical decisions on his behalf. That's what happened. So when the hospital got questioned, they said that he had signed a directive that she was responsible for him. Fuck. This is so fucked. And then the coroner investigated it and said it was accidental, no evidence of wrongdoing, blah, blah, blah. Of course, he was cremated, so no one can check anything. Dude, this is incredible. I give this 4 grumps. This doco was amazing.
Just as a quick follow-up, yeah. U.S. judge rules against child star Gary Coleman's ex-wife because the estate went to court.
It's because she was trying to get it.
Yeah. Salt Lake City, former child star Gary Coleman's ex-wife failed to prove she had lived with him as a common law spouse even after their divorce, a Utah judge has ruled, in a move that could strip her of rights to the different strokes act as estate.
Good.
But this is 2012.
Yeah.
So there's no update here on what happened.
Well, we got a documentary and they fucking painted her exactly the way they should have, as a cunt.
I just wonder who got the estate. It appeared that she was still living in that house. Right? That's another weird thing as well. They kept showing that Utah house. It looked like she was still living in it.
I don't know. People anyway, watch and make up your mind.
It's a fascinating documentary.
Fascinating.
Right. And really sad. So sad.
When he said that he didn't want to have a funeral, that just tells me how he thought about life. He was so sad.
Yeah, there was one point in the documentary where it's like, and then Gary went back to Price, and I was like, oh no, Gary.
Yeah. So now Damien let out a no, Gary. So now anytime something bad happens, I just want to say, oh, Gary. And then they also
he just keeps making the wrong decisions throughout the whole documentary. Like,
I know, and everyone's trying to tell him that she's a fucking horse, and no one's, and he's not listening. And then everyone calls him Gear, and I just can't stop thinking of
Hey Gear,
yeah, Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. Like, Hey Gear, got you some coffee.
Hey Gear.
Anyway, all right. You want to give it any grumps or?
Yeah, I'll give it 4 grumps. It was really interesting. It's really well made. They kind of keep their powder dry until the last 10 minutes of the documentary.
Great. Well, it's time to end this
potty. It's definitely something that needs to be looked into.
Because I need to go to the toilet, and that's it.
When Kelly needs to potty.
Been going for over an hour.
I just want to say this is a new catchphrase. When Kelly needs to potty, it's time to end the potty.
Oh, shut up, idiot. Listen, thanks for listening. We love you guys. If you have anything you want us to watch, let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll watch it, and then we'll keep going, and tell your friends and download. Give us 5 stars. Mm-hmm. We love you very much. Thank you for
supporting Apple
us.
In particular, if you could do that. And, we love all reviews, but on Apple, that's the bestest.
And we really thank everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys. We love you very much. We love you too, bye.